We are joined right now by John Wozniak of Marcy Playground, a.k.a. Woz. Way back in the day, late 1997 and early 98, Sex and Candy blew up all over the globe, and we're happy to announce that Marcy Playground is out and about this summer on tour. John, what's up, man? How are you?
Oh, good. I've been in the studio working on the rarities record that we're putting out, so I'm busy, but good. Can't wait for the tour.
Yeah, well, tell us about that. I was going to ask you about that.
Well, it's, you know, it's us and Jim Blossoms and Sugar Ray and Everclear and Lit, and it's just a big tour for the summer. Summerland tour. It's going to be fun. Played a couple shows with Everclear recently, but haven't toured with those guys since 98 when we did the tour with Fastball. It was like a big long.
Art's like a god, isn't he? I love that guy from Everclear.
Yeah, I like Art. He's definitely like one of the most motivated people I've ever met. Like he's a cool guy and a great musician.
Well, I want to talk about your last album that came out in September of 2010, I think, but still fairly new. And kick-ass concept of the album. Well, first of all, I guess I want to tell you that I love the songs Memphis and Blackbird, the remixes.
Yeah, man, totally cool. That's
yeah,
great to hear.
And kind of tell, like, explain though the concept of the record for a lot of people that don't know about it yet.
Well, there's a community of people around the world that conglomerate onto this website called Indaba Music, and these are musicians usually. You don't necessarily have to be; you can come on and learn about music. But it's a social network like Facebook of sorts, but for musicians. And they get together and they actually create and collaborate to make music together, to create it. And they have probably close to a million members around the world now. When we did it, it was just a couple hundred thousand, and we put our stems up, and stems are stereo versions of each instrument from a recording. So a stem of the drums would be a stereo track of just the drums, and likewise with guitars, and so on down the line for for a song. So we put all those up on a server, and people around the world got to download these tracks and do different remixes with them, so they could edit them, change them, and put effects on them, and do whatever they want to them. And we had a contest, and we had, about 350 people submit remixes. And we chose, 13, I think we picked at the end of the day. But the beautiful thing about it is that it becomes their art, too. So what we ended up doing is we made a record, and we released it with the 13 that we chose. And gave them royalties on the remixes that they did.
Yeah, how cool is that? I was going to ask about that. That's awesome. And then, so there's a rumor of a lot of B-sides and previously unheard tracks that may be coming out in the near future. Is that still?
I just finished it today.
Nuh-uh.
I just submitted before calling you. I just submitted the final credits and notes and stuff that I'd written on for the inside of the booklet and stuff.
No way. That's
and,
cool.
And the last song and the music to the mastering guy. So it's all coming out in the next. Before the tour. We want to have it out before we hit the road for the tour. And by the way, there's 19 songs, so it's a lot of music.
Jeez Louise. That'll be good.
Yeah.
That'll be good. So let's kind of go back to the beginning then. So you grew up in Minneapolis mainly, right?
Yeah.
And then, from what I understand, you kind of taught yourself to play guitar in your early teens. You began writing, recording music shortly after that. What do you remember about those early days? Because didn't you have, like, your own bedroom studio and stuff? What was that like back in the day?
It was harder. It was a lot harder. Yeah. Now I have a big recording studio in Toronto. It's a big, commercial facility that I own and run. But yeah, for the most part, back in those days, you had to work with cassette machines if you didn't have a lot of money. So you'd record things on, multi-track cassette. And so I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make it not noisy. I remember that, especially in my bedroom, because, if there was a thunderstorm or whatever, I couldn't record. If there was... if my brother was home making noise with his friends, I couldn't record.
Someone with a saw outside cutting down trees, right?
Yeah, it was just a lot harder, but it was fun. And I did it with an 8-track cassette machine, and I made the first record that I've ever released, and that was a record called Zog Bog Bean. And that was in, 92, somewhere in there.
And wasn't there some Marcy Playground? Was it that album or the second one, Songs from Marcy Playground or something? Is that where the name came from?
Yeah. Yeah, the band name came from a song I wrote called From the Marcy Playground, which was about the school that I grew up at in Minneapolis. It was my grade school, Marcy Open School in Minneapolis. So.
Is there like a plaque on the playground there now?
I don't know. I doubt it. But, it's funny. Years ago, it was probably 99-ish. I don't know. It was before they canceled. I know they brought this back recently, but before they canceled that show, Pop-Up Video.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah, and then and like they mentioned like the playground and stuff like that, and then like a week later, they were doing Behind the Music, and somehow like they interviewed my kindergarten teacher, this guy Greg. I don't know how they managed to track this guy down, but they ended up interviewing him about that, and you know, hey, what was it like, you know, having John as a 5-year-old in your classroom? And he was like, oh, it was great. He was a good kid. You know, he pretended like he remembered me. I don't know if he really did. I'm sure, you know, he may or may not have really remembered me, but.
Dude, how can you not remember Waz? Come on. He remembers you.
Hey.
Let's be honest here. So I know that Sherry was your, you know, girlfriend at the time, and she was a big influence. She's done some tracks of you guys, and you guys wrote a song about it and everything. So, well, I mean, what kind of an impact did she have in your career back then?
She's had an impact on my career ever since. I mean, she's, you know, one of my favorite artists. She's still a friend. You know, she works on our T-shirts. She did the artwork design for Leaving Wonderland, which came out in, you know, like 4 years ago. You know, she's still a good friend. And but, you know, I would say the impact that she's had most is just her music. She's an amazing songwriter, and she plays in a band called Tuton Boa, which is a band from Olympia, Washington, and, you know, very, very hard, heavy band. You know, it's like all basses and like heavy drums and a lot of distortion and very intense stuff. And but she's really creative, and you know, I've always drawn inspiration from what it is that she's been able to create artistically.
So you go to college for a couple of years, then out east, and then you move to New York City, and then Marcy Playground kind of began doing the club, you know, the club scene all over the NYC. And then you got your record deal. What do you remember about the day you got the record deal, that moment, and how did it come about happening?
Oh man. Okay, so I hadn't met Dylan yet. I was playing with Kurt Rosenwinkel, who's a really famous jazz guitar player. But he was a friend of mine from Philadelphia. We grew up together. He wasn't a huge famous jazz guitar player back then, but has since become, you know, big wig on Blue Note and stuff. But anyway, so I had him, I sort of conscripted him to play bass for lack of a better word, a showcase. But it was at our drummer's place. And so they came out, you know, the record people came out. And I remember it was Don Rubin, who ended up being our A&R guy. He's an older fellow. He was like, worked with Frank Sinatra and signed the Lovin' Spoonful, and he's, you know, really interesting guy. And David Segerson, who was the president of the label at the time, but he was responsible for like the Bangles and stuff. And then Brian Koppelman, who is now a big time film guy and wrote the movie Rounders and like, you know, just totally like in Hollywood now, but he was the other guy. And this is, you know, three people, three big sort of entertainment industry moguls that showed up at our drummer's house, and we set up a little PA, and the three of us played. And we played four songs, and at the end of it, I think it was Don or David, anyway, said, all right, well, let's make some records. Literally, that was it. They said, all right, let's make some records. And I said, okay. And they said, all right. And they got up and they left. Next thing I knew, there was a record contract, you know, and, you know, it was weird.
What kind of jobs were you doing back then to help finance the music addiction? Were you working during the day, or was it only music?
I painted. I refinished furniture. I worked in a movie theater. That didn't last very long.
Let people in for free?
Yeah. But, yeah, no, I mean, I did a lot of different things. Whatever I could, you know, do to basically pay the rent and eat.
Yeah.
I think you just do what you can, you know, when you're making music. People don't realize that nobody cares. Nobody pays you until all of a sudden, you know, you're doing something and you're doing well, and then all of a sudden you get paid. But,
well, and then
it's a shame.
You guys blew up then, obviously, Sex and Candy. 15 weeks, number one, put you guys on the radio all over the world. So the story of that song, when did you first write that song and come up with it? Do you remember the actual day?
I do. Yeah, no, it was a long time before it came out. It was spring break, 1993. I was upstairs in my brother's room because he was out with some friends, but he was the only one with a box at the time. Like, you know, we called them boxes. Basically, it was a radio, you know, stereo, like a portable stereo with a cassette machine, with a cassette recorder in it. So I popped a cassette in that thing, and it had a little microphone on the front of it, and hit record, and started working on this song, and to me it sounded kind of like Mick Jaggery, sort of Stones-ish at the time, which of course it doesn't now, but and at the end of the day, but I was kind of doing this sort of, I don't know, I was just trying to make it sexy, but cool at the same time. And then and I got to the end of it, and I was like, okay, this is cool. And my brother had just gotten home, and I went down and I brought his box out. He's like, what are you doing with my box? He was so pissed off that I was, like, messing with his stuff. And I was like, don't worry about it. Just check it. Check this out, man. Listen to this song. And, like, I played it for him. He's like, wow, that's really good. He's like, that's the best thing I've heard you write in a long time. So that was the day.
And you just kind of pulled it out years later? I mean, when you brought it out later, did you have any expectations for it?
None. In fact, I didn't even want to put it on the record. I remember I was talking to this guy, Ken Joy, who was engineering our record at the time. As even before the label had signed us, we were in the studio, and this dude was adamant. He got out of his chair, in fact. I remember this. You know, we'd recorded it, and I mentioned something about not wanting to put it on the record because it didn't really fit with the rest of the songs because it was older than them and stuff. And he just slammed his hand on the console, stood up, and said, I'm off this project. I'm out of here if this song doesn't end up on this record. That is my favorite song. And just because of his, like, super adamant, response, I was, how can you not? I had to put it on the record, so yeah. It ended up, on the record, and people love it.
Yeah, it did pretty well. So what's Disco Lemonade? What is that exactly?
It's just, I don't want to say it. It's party material.
Okay, I got you now. And the tarantula on that video, were you actually near that thing, man? That's always freaked me out. Really?
Oh, yeah, no, that was a totally real. There was two tarantulas. The first one was really fast and was really scared and kind of like was twitchy that day. And they actually have a thing called a spider wrangler when you're working with animals like that. In film, they have a wrangler for them. And this guy, he was like, yeah, the first one's really not going to work. And I was like, what do you mean? And I go back, and it's one of those bigger, hairier ones. And so he'd touch it. And usually I've seen, I had a roommate once who had a tarantula, and those things usually move pretty slow until you put a cricket in their cage, and then they're just like, poof, and they just, right onto the cricket, and they'll devour the thing. Anyway, this one, he, like, touched it with a brush, like a paintbrush, and it just took off across the table. So I was like, yeah, I don't really want to work with that one. Do we have an alternate tarantula? And so he brought out, and I can't remember her name. It was a female, and she was just really docile. And he touched her with the brush, and she just kind of glumped along. And that was it. And I'm like, okay, that one.
Oh.
And so when she walked past me, it was because he had to, like, he stood there before the camera was rolling and, like, had to brush her with the brush, and then she'd go traipsing off.
Didn't that freak you out?
Nah, because, I mean, like, I'd sort of made friends with her beforehand. Because, and realized that she was a glumper. She wasn't really looking to do anything except get away from the paintbrush.
A non-groupie spider, right?
Yeah, no, she wasn't dangerous.
Deadly Handsome Man, I think, is my all-time favorite song by you guys. Came out a few years later. How'd you come up with that song?
That song, that's a good question. I don't remember. It just came out. I think I was in a hotel room or something, and I do remember. Oh, this guy from Universal Pictures asked me to write a song for the movie Josie and the Pussycats. Is that Punk Rock Superstar or is that Deadly Handsome Man? Well, anyway, it was right around the same time. So it was one of the two. That might have been Punk Rock Superstar. But, I can't remember.
Maybe you just looked
a bad memory.
You just looked in the mirror and you're like, that's a Deadly Handsome Man, and went with it? One of those types
No.
No, that's not it.
It wasn't that. I think it was just, it's about sort of the devil reincarnate on the earth, sort of character in the world that floats around. You don't really know. You remember the movie The Firm?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like that sort of character that Pacino played.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like the movie's sort of about that sort of person is, seductive in the sense that they, like, have, oops, I can't say that, lots of money.
Good old Clint Eastwood flick, man. I love that movie.
Yeah, good. It's great. So.
Well, tell us one more time. So tell us. Well, first of all, tell us how we can keep in touch with you on Facebook, Twitter, website. Pimp that here for a second.
Well, it's MarcyPlayground.com. My Twitter is Blizzard of Woz. That's my Twitter name. And let's see what else. Facebook, I think it's just, I don't know, but you can do a search on that. Facebook, I just usually end up using my personal Facebook page, but yeah, MarcyPlayground.com. You can always find our tour dates. You can always find new projects we're working on, and you know, this Rarities record we put out and we're putting out, and then the Indaba stuff we've worked on. And, you know, we're always doing something. Last few years we've toured pretty relentlessly, so you know, there's always a date when we're out there playing some shows.
I'm excited for that 19 track stuff, man. That's pretty cool that you finished it today. I'm stoked.
Yeah. And it's all stuff that's unreleased or, you know, wasn't put on one of the albums. So it's like B-sides and stuff that was in films and stuff like that.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, thanks so much for your time, and let's definitely stay in touch. And I look forward to seeing you out on tour this summer, man.
Yeah, cool. Sounds good, dude.
Take care.
Have a good one, man.
Bye.